Welcome, everyone. My name is Representative Cheryl Joaquin, and I am the chair of the House Education Policy Committee, and I am calling the House Education Policy Committee to order. First, I'd like to take some brief housekeeping items. So once again, we'll be muting and unmuting folks' mics to keep the audio clean. I'll try to be notifying you when that is happening. And then also, just like always, notify that you want to be recognized through the chair, either by raising your hand in the Zoom feature or pressing *9 if you're calling in. And then, or you can also email either Alyssa Fritz or Megan Ariola. And members, you would have gotten your committee packets this morning of all the items that were on our agenda today and all the handouts. They were also posted online in our committee section. And comments from the public, if we have time today, even though we're not taking any action, if you wish to submit a written comment, please email them to edpolicy@house.mn. That's edpolicy@house.mn. So members, are there any questions before we take the roll? Seeing none, staff will now unmute all the microphones so that the CLA can take the roll.
Chair Joaquin.
Present.
Representative Kunesh Padin.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Barr. Representative Baker. Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hassan.
Present.
Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Mariani. Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
Representative Scott. Representative Erdahl.
I'm here.
Representative Wazlowick.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. A quorum is present. We are going to now take, we are now going to adopt the minutes from our last meeting on April 22nd. There's a copy of the minutes in your virtual meeting packets. We're going to do this by voice vote, so staff will unmute all the microphones. Representative Herr, do you move the adoption of the minutes from April 22nd, 2020?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes, members?
We are going to now take
Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion passes and the minutes for April 22nd, 2020 are adopted. We'll now pause for staff to remute the microphone. Okay, members, wow, we held a hearing back on February 11th, that seems like forever ago, on House File 3186, which was the Minnesota Department of Education Policy Committee. We took public testimony, but we didn't have a lot of time to vet with member questions. We also heard many of the provisions of what you'll see before us today in the DE2 as individual bills where we did take testimony and also have questions. So some of these items we've seen will be seeing for the third time. So today we're going to be hearing from the department once again and in more detail about the slimmed down version of a policy bill that you'll see in DE2 from Minnesota Department of Education. We're not going to be taking any votes today or make any motions. I simply want to have testimony and a thorough discussion on these provisions. And want to also welcome, I know Representative Dave Baker just joined us. Thank you. Commissioner Mary Catherine Ricker from the Department of Education will be here today to say a few words about the DE2, followed by Mr. Adosh Uni, who will walk through the bill. And then they have a few testifiers that are speaking in support. But after that, I want to open up for member questions that will be directed just towards Commissioner Ricker before she has to leave at 3:30. Then we have some other members, organizations signed up to testify. We'll do that, and then we'll open up for member questions once again. So with that, Commissioner Ricker, welcome to the committee. Could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Yes, my name is Mary Catherine Ricker, and I am Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Education. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss DEQ, this amendment to the Governor's Policy Bill, House File 3186. Thank you again, Madam Chair, for authoring the underlying bill and giving another opportunity to discuss these provisions. I'd like to take a few minutes to discuss the importance of continuing to consider these proposals, and then Adosh Uni of Government Relations will do a walkthrough of the provisions, as you stated. Thank you. On February 26th, I did have the pleasure, along with MDE leaders, of presenting the full version of the governor's policy bill. Then, as we all know, everything changed with the COVID-19 outbreak and the ensuing distance learning period. While many discussions up to this point have been focused on immediate COVID-19 responses, I am thankful that there has been a continued recognition that non-COVID-19 related proposals still solve real problems. We are aware that the current distance learning format is shining a bright light on the disparities that exist in our education system for our students of color, our Indigenous students, our students with disabilities, and our students living in poverty. I believe these proposals will help mitigate those disparities by helping us reach our collective goal that every child will receive a world-class education in a safe and welcoming environment with caring and qualified educators. I want to highlight some themes that remain from the governor's policy bill in the DE2 amendment that members in the public should still consider as important issue areas. First, I'd like to thank the legislature and the community, especially Hunger Solutions and Legal Aid, for continuing to shed a light on and providing solutions for getting our students healthy and nutritious meals in a respectful manner. The proposal in this bill represents purposeful and passionate advocacy from and collaboration by many community members, representative groups, and legislators. I admire and appreciate all of the hard work our school food service staff do on a daily basis. That work has become even more important now to ensure students in need are still receiving meals during the distance learning period. However, in some rare circumstances, we have seen practices that punish children for adult problems, and that is simply not acceptable. Every child deserves to be fed and treated with respect, period. Which is why we must provide clear and consistent guidelines to our schools for equitable, kind and caring ways of providing meals to all of our students. It recognizes the financial stresses that unpaid meal debt creates for food service budgets. Second, this bill contains several proposals aimed at improving our partnership with our tribal nations in support of American Indian education. These provisions range from enhancing American Indian Parent Advisory Committees to building stronger relationships between MDE and the Tribal Nations Education Committee, to affirming the right of our American Indian graduates to wear tribal regalia at their graduation ceremonies. I want to thank the Tribal Nations Education Committee for their collaboration on these matters. I echo Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan in their call to continue our commitment to collaborate with and consult our tribal nations on a regular basis. Third, I want to highlight the proposals that emphasize the needed supports and lenses we must look through to fully support our students from historically marginalized groups. Our communities continue to tell us that schools are not inclusive and culturally responsive spaces for all students, staff, and families. This lack of inclusivity and responsiveness is a contributor to Minnesota's opportunity gap, which I know all members of the committee are keenly aware of and concerned about. I want to recognize the work on these proposals by the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers. Their work has been crucial to creating programs currently underway and spurring conversations about future possibilities. These proposed policies emphasize inclusive and respectful teaching, learning, and working environments for all students, families, and school staff by updating statutes around the world's best workforce, achievement and integration, and teacher and principal development and evaluation. Finally, we must recognize the true picture around student discipline. Hidden from our view are instances when families agree with schools that their students should voluntarily withdraw to avoid a more formal, on the books, and quite frankly, harsher punishment like expulsion. While I recognize the impetus for these agreements, I strongly believe that they hide inequalities in our education system. The Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition has been instrumental in championing next generation restorative practices, de-escalation, and inclusionary policies, including tracking pupil withdrawal agreements. Our proposal requires transparency around the usage of pupil withdrawal agreements so that we can provide policymakers and communities with the full picture of how our students exit districts and charters. Our initial proposal was much more ambitious, an attempt at reforming a system that has produced shocking disparities and disproportionate amount of school time loss for the same group of students we are trying to support to close the achievement gap. We have scaled back that proposal to focus on this one essential issue that we believe cannot wait. Let's continue to work together to accurately present the disciplinary decisions in our schools. This data will help inform communities and decision makers on how to best address the school-to-prison pipeline. I again want to thank the chair and the committee for hearing the governor's policy proposals contained in the DE2 amendment. I am confident that our continued collaboration will result in a better future for all of our students, families, and educators. Madam Chair and committee, thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Ricker. Mr. Uni, would you like us to state your name for the record and walk us through the bill?
Madam Chair, members, thank you. My name is Adosh Uni, Government Relations with the Department of Education. I will be walking through the summary document that the department has provided the committee and I believe is included in your packets. You'll note, and I won't note this for each provision, but after the end of each provision, we've noted which bill that specific proposal has appeared in, including the chair's bill 3186, as well as several other bills that were heard in committee. With that, Madam Chair, I can begin with Article 1. Article 1, Section 1 is a proposal that provides flexible language in Chapter 13 that allows but doesn't require school districts to share data on tribally enrolled or descended students with tribal nations. Section 2 requires the commissioner to consider advice from the Tribal Nations Education Committee when setting standards. Sections 3 and 4 seek to create school environments that are culturally responsive, inclusive, and respectful learning and work environments for students, staff, families, and community. And this modifies the world's best workforce statute. Section 5 does the same, except by modifying the achievement and integration statutes. And that concludes Article 1. Article 2, Safe and Nurturing Schools for Every Student. Section 1 discusses requiring transmitted education records when they to include when a pupil withdraws. Section 2 defines a pupil withdrawal agreement. Section 3 clarifies that a school district or charter, when complying with its responsibility to not dismiss a student before providing alternative programming, shall engage in the pupil withdrawal process. Section 4 requires a school to report on pupil withdrawal agreements to the department. Section 5 is the language that the commissioner discussed. This is the consensus language in HF 55 around school lunch delivery and barring lunch sharing. Section 6 protects American Indian students' right to wear tribal regalia or other objects of cultural significance at graduation ceremonies. Section 7 requires charters to follow municipal contracting laws to provide better record keeping around special education services in particular. And that concludes Article 2. Article 3, Section 1. This section sets a statewide goal of 2 percentage points per year for increasing the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. Sections 2 and 3 require teachers to be evaluated on cultural responsiveness as part of the teacher development and evaluation statutes. Section 4 allows tribal contract schools to receive finance training from the Minnesota School Boards Association. Section 5 requires principals to be evaluated on cultural responsiveness as part of their evaluation process. And that concludes Article 3. Article 4, Section 1 aligns federal guidance around what a school district can require to prove age when enrolling in public schools. Section 2 eliminates obsolete language under compulsory instruction, and this waives a competency exam for instructors in unaccredited schools, as this exam has never, we can't find records of this exam ever existing. Section 3 strikes obsolete language around the Early Learning Foundation Scholarship Program pilot sites. Section 4 makes clarifying changes to the American Indian Education Program, specifically placing the words American Indian before pupils. Section 5 includes a state definition of American Indian. Section 6 requires a majority of parents on American Indian parent advisory boards to be parents of American Indian students. Section 7 modifies MDE's requirement to provide technical assistance to include providing an annual report of American Indian student data using the state count of American Indian students. Section 8 inserts the use of state count of American Indian students for the purposes of American Indian aid, and this is current practice. Section 9 updates an incorrect reference or statutory reference in the Achievement and Integration Aid Statute. Section 10 clarifies that charter schools must follow the English Learners Act. Section 11 requires charters to follow the law prohibiting corporal punishment. Sections 12 and 13 clarify that if an authorizer withdraws before the end of their five-year evaluation, they're not subject to an evaluation. Section 4 clarifies that entry into a charter school is free to any student in Minnesota. Section 15 clarifies that only one local education agency may organize an affiliated nonprofit building corporation. Section 16 requires MDE to align rule with a law that was passed last year for conciliation conferences. Section 17 adds tribal nations to the interagency early intervention committees. Section 18 updates a reference in statute for a name change for a national association working with the blind and print disabled. Section 19 removes obsolete language around expungements that still has MDE receiving expungements for licensees. And that concludes Article 4. And Article 5 is directing the revisor's office to make necessary cross-reference changes consistent with renumbering. And Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the DE2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Next members, I just wanted to have the three testifiers come up. They're speaking in support of the bill, and then we'll open it up for questions to the commissioners. So we'll have Paul Spies, Maron Halden, and Lori Harper. Mr. Spies, if you could go first, please state your name for the record and the organization you're with, and then proceed.
Good afternoon, members. Madam Chair, my name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. Very pleased that in House File 3186, DE2, that three sections that we had in the Increased Teachers of Color Act, House File 3201, were included. Those in particular are the amendments to the World's Best Workforce, the Achievement and Integration Program, in Section 5 of Article 1, and Article 3, Section 1, for the state goal to increase teachers of color and American Indian teachers, including a state accountability report. We, as a coalition, have been, as Commissioner recognized, very involved the last several sessions, and you heard us, and we had a hearing on House File 3201 a couple months ago, a couple years ago in COVID terms. And it is all about trying to solidify the investment that we're making in trying to increase teachers of color, American Indian teachers, and close opportunity gaps for our students. One of the big problems that hasn't been addressed in the past has been the issue of retention of teachers of color. And by creating inclusive and respectful learning and work environments, not only are we closing opportunity and achievement gaps for students, but we're doing so to help create a better environment to retain our teachers of color. So we've been working the last 3 years and building consensus with a wide range of stakeholders. We've been partnering with the State Ethnic Councils and Indian Affairs Council. They've been great partners to help lead this effort, as well as all the major education and community organizations, 50 of which have endorsed our bills. So we're very confident that you can go into the end of session feeling like all of that background work to get a bipartisan agreement on these provisions is very solid and will help help Minnesota's schools and students and teachers. These proposals are also very aligned with the Reimagine Minnesota proposal and research that many of you know about with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts and area superintendents. Finally, I'd like to say we support Article 1, Section 2 on standards development for including tribal nations, education council, the graduation ceremonies provisions in Article 2, Section 6, as well as Article 3, Section 2, 3, and 5 about culturally responsive evaluations for teachers and principals. We also agree with the positions of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. So we really appreciate your inclusion in this bill, 3186. We hope you act to approve it as a committee and move it on forward in the process the remainder of this session. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Spies. And I want to welcome Representative Scott and Representative Mariani. And I forgot to make an announcement. I'm trying to have testifiers try to keep it under 2 minutes so we have enough time for questions. So. Ms. Helden, would you like to go next? Please state your name for the record and the organization you represent.
Sure. Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim and members, my name is Maren Helden. I'm an attorney with Legal Aid, which includes the Minnesota Disability Law Center. Legal Aid is also part of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. And I'm happy to be here today to talk about the inclusion of the provisions that would define and require reporting on pupil withdrawal agreements. In my practice representing students with disabilities on school issues, I saw these agreements fairly frequently where districts would propose pupil withdrawal agreements in lieu of expulsions, whereas expelling a student requires the district to hold a hearing, which is appealable. With the pupil withdrawal agreement, parents or guardians would sign an agreement that they're not allowed to enroll their child at the school anymore, and then the expulsion would not go in the student's record. This can be a useful tool. Sometimes my clients and their families felt like the withdrawal agreement was the best path forward for them. But I did often find that my clients and their families didn't truly feel like they had choices about whether to enter into these agreements, or they didn't fully understand the ramifications of them. In early March, this committee held a hearing on this as a standalone bill, and parents of students who had experienced this testified, and administrators from Venture Academy also testified, noting that their school sees an influx of mid-year students enrollment without a lot of data on where these kids are coming from and how the school could best support them. You know, I think pupil withdrawal agreements are in effect a form of student dismissal, and they can be, they're really more serious than a suspension. And so Solutions Not Suspensions believes, and I believe, that they should be counted and reported like other dismissals. When we don't do that, we're missing out on a lot of data about this practice, how often it occurs, how the demographics break down of the students entering into them, and kind of what the underlying student behaviors are. And so collecting this data, as is included in Article 2, Sections 2 through 4 of this bill, would help give educators, parents, and stakeholders the information that they need to serve students better. So I hope that you will support this bill and that provision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Helden. Next, we have Ms. Lori Harper. Could you please state your name for the record and your organization and proceed?
Good afternoon. I'm Laurie Harper. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm the Director of Education for Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe in North Central Minnesota. I'm also a committee member of the Tribal Nations Education Committee, also known as the TNEC. I am also the president of the Tribal Education Department's National Assembly. It's a national coalition on tribal education departments. As a tribal ed director for Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, we've been following equity in education for quite a while. And really what these changes are and what MDE has been striving to do is about a matter of equity and inclusion. Educational equity is the condition of justice, fairness, and inclusion in our systems of education so that all students have access to the opportunities to learn and develop to their fullest potentials. The pursuit of educational equity recognizes the historical conditions and barriers that have prevented opportunity and success in learning for students based on their races, income, and other social conditions. Eliminating those structural and institutional barriers to educational opportunities requires systemic change that allows for distribution of resources, information, and other support depending on the student's situation to ensure an equitable outcome. Equity is different from equality. Equity is a principle that is based upon justness and fairness, while equality demands everyone be treated at the same level. MDE has been leading for educational excellence and equity, meaning every day for everyone. On the access to data issue, this is definitely something that the Tribal Nations Education Committee and TEDNA, the Tribal Education Department's National Assembly, has been advocating for. So I'm advocating at a state level and at a federal level for equitable access to data when it comes to our students. We know that when we have access to data, that it becomes a tool for us to help us assess what is working and what is not working so we don't continue to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. That's everything that I have right now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Harper. Members, as I said before we move on to further testimony for those who signed up, I'd like to open the floor for some questions for the commissioner before she has to leave. And so far, I have Representative Erdahl on the list. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Look, I've been having a little trouble today, so I'll call you back on the phone. But first, I think there are a lot of good things in here. I think the emphasis on the culture is good. Looking at the world's best workforce, there are some important things there. I have a question, though, on the world's best workforce. Heard some things in there having to do with maybe knowing a little, and I was informed that it was kind of a hands-off area. Author of World's Best Workforce, Representative Marquardt, at that point was pretty definite. He wanted no changes. I'm just wondering if Representative Marquardt has been consulted at all about making these changes.
Commissioner Ricker, would you like to answer that?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl. I definitely appreciate your question, and I appreciate the opportunity to address the proposals and the priorities we have here. We spent a while engaging a lot of people, including legislators. I know we've had conversations with Representative Marquardt, and I know we've had conversations with community members and other organizations who care a great deal about some of the changes we've prioritized in front of you today.
Madam Chair?
Representative Erdahl, did you have a follow-up?
Yes. Actually, I'm going to hear, but I do appreciate Commissioner conferring with Representative Marquardt about that. I think it's do so. One other area, and that's about qualified just for every student. As you're likely aware, for quite some time in that area, and I met Posse Solberg, the Finnish expert in experts in education, and there they did three things fundamental to maintaining a high quality teaching force. Teachers with degrees in their master's programs. We did do a bit a couple of years ago, and I guess I'm interested if there's been any tracking to know, do we have an increase in the number of master's area? The second two areas that were essential were mentoring and student teaching. They have in Finland, a student teaching program, and I tried to do some things with that. We did a pilot program ago. Mentoring, getting a consistent mentoring program is important, but I think we've had some COVID-related problems with getting that forward. So, master's degrees, mentoring, student teaching, have you considered implementing any of those in more in to the qualified?
Before you answer, Commissioner Ricker, members, can you make sure and testifiers that you have your mics muted when someone else is talking? Background noise is making the audio cut in and out. So, Commissioner Ricker, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl. These are all really important topics. I will say I will work with my staff and perhaps Kelsey to get the number of educators currently practicing who have master's degrees right now. I do not have that information, and I do not know the trend off the top of my head. So I am happy to get that for you if we have access to that information. We'll work on that for you.
In their content.
Representative Erdahl, can you hold off until she finishes? When you cut in like that, we lose the audio. So members, please mute your mics if you're not speaking, and we'll go through the chair.
Thank you.
Continue, Commissioner Ricker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I understood the clarification Representative Erdahl was offering me there, and that is a master's degree in our content area. So not just, for example, in curriculum and instruction, for example, but in a master's in mathematics or a master's in biology or a master's in English. And I don't know that trends data, but I am happy to try to find it for you. The other thing you mentioned was mentoring and the importance of mentoring. And that is something I care deeply about, and I know we want to build in the sort of structures that are supportive of mentoring of our educators. And one of the examples I will give that will help that will be embedded into any strong mentoring program for your consideration when we add cultural competency to both a teacher's and a principal's development and evaluation. That will serve as a recognition of how important it is through an entire continuum, which means it will also be adopted into mentoring programs. because our administrators, of course, and our educators are going to want to make sure that they are representing cultural responsiveness in their work. And so their mentoring programs are going to support that. And so it's an example of something that is probably adjacent to the goal of mentoring, but definitely would be a deliberate part of mentoring for your consideration.
Okay, Madam
Chair. Representative Erdahl, did you have another follow-up?
Not really, just a point. I'd like to thank the commissioner for her interest and her consideration in these areas. Regarding, as you know, Madam Chair, a bill on that. I've been in friends of the School Board Association making some changes. Well, maybe something that we could look at in terms of forming a level group to look at devising what would be a good mentorship program in Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I have Representative Erickson, then Grunhagen, and then Sandel. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome, Commissioner, to our committee. It is good to hear your voice. As I look at this House file, your policy bill, I am surprised that you have consented to add so many new mandates when we're at a time when a continuity of education should be primary. I think you have before you probably the biggest decisions you're going to have to make about one-fourth of the school year that our children now are experiencing through distance learning. And I see nothing in this proposal about what the department plans to do to take care of that continuum as we learn more and more about what happened to our children and our families during this time period. So would you tell us what you plan to do in regard to the continuity of distance education as it continues? And what you might have in mind for summer school, and then what monitoring you're doing with your staff to get ready for perhaps a continuation of this distance learning next fall or whenever the pandemic might come back to haunt us.
Commissioner Ricker.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for your really thoughtful question. First, thank you so much for allowing us time to share these policy provisions that we first had the opportunity to walk through with you over a month ago, and your recognition that we are noticing some incredible changes in the experiences our students are having this spring. There are some enduring proposals here that are for your consideration that our students deserve to have in their school system in the way they will return to it. And at the same time, I absolutely appreciate your question about what's next, what immediately is next for our students. Those are definitely discussions we are having, plans that are under development. We have been making a series of public health decisions for our students and their families and our communities right now. And as we considered distance learning and as we work really hard to present the most equitable distance learning experience for our students. And those plans going forward include working alongside our school districts and our charter schools to determine first the plans they already had in place for summer school. Knowing that everyone we have talked to, every school leader we have talked to, has a sincere interest in building out those plans, recognizing that they want a more robust summer learning opportunity for their students than they had originally anticipated, given the spring experience that our students are having and that our school communities are having. And then those discussions and those plans under development and in some respects that brainstorming and that determination of what could be possible for this fall, a lot of those conversations are blended together and as well as independent of each other. What can be done, what can be tried this summer that would not necessarily work for an entire school year or a welcome back to fall. Conversely, we're also looking at what models do we have the time, because we do have a few months, a few precious months before this September. What do we have the time to build out around transportation, around what public health guidance could look like and public health adherence, what our CDC is telling us, the most up-to-date information from the Department of Health and the CDC, what they're telling us about what safe transportation practices could be, safe education practices, safe practices during packing time, during lunch, and in class, and what sort of hybrid models could exist for students and families, depending, to your point, depending on what we return to this fall. So we are definitely listening to our school leaders about what they feel they had anticipated having the capacity to do, what their ambitions are to build out that capacity this summer, and then looking ahead, how we can support them and how we are thinking of what the spectrum of possibilities could be this fall and making sure that we have time to prepare for them.
Representative Erickson, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, thank you for that answer. I know that school districts are very concerned about the future, as are our charter schools. But there's an expansion of your duties in this proposal. And I'm wondering, do you have money in the budget to cover everything that's required of the department in the 3186 policy bill?
Commissioner Ricker.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you very much for asking. Our staff has done a very careful discernment of this policy bill moving forward, and we are comfortable supporting our school communities with this work.
Representative Erickson, did you have any more follow-up before we move on?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, because we now have cultural competency training, and we also have, of course, in statutory language that was created by Representative Mariani and then expanded by me a few years after that, why is it that we need to have in the world's best workforce this cultural relevancy or the ethnic studies when teachers are being trained and so are candidates in cultural competency, and then the statutory language requires that there is the ability for educators and families to interact and understand situations that might occur because of language, because of socioeconomic, or because of culture. So why this great expansion of the world's best workforce when that's going to mean that teachers are going to have to take a lot of extra time that maybe they don't have? They have gone through a training. So I'm confused by why all of this addition to the world's best workforce and also changes to teacher evaluation, when I think our teachers are really going to have to concentrate for the most part on making sure the children are caught up after this time away from their classrooms. I know parents are doing a good job. Teachers are trying really hard. But this is going to really be different for our children when they return. And our focus needs to be on ensuring that we have educated them to the best of our ability. And I think that means we have to have fewer new proposals in law and fewer mandates and concentrate on how do we ensure that our children, and I think of K-2 in particular, what are those poor children doing, to get ready for the basics that they're going to face in third grade? Third grade is a very difficult grade to position yourself for as a little one, because that's when there's more accountability. So, I'm frustrated by this. I know that, there are some good proposals in here that could come in the future, perhaps, but not now when we need continuity of education because of the pandemic and because our children are away from that which really, in the end, they love the most, and that's their classroom, their teacher, and their friends. So please respond to that, Commissioner, because I don't know why you want to go forth with so much new stuff when we really need to focus on getting our children to where they need to be so they have a great future ahead of them as they go from grade to grade.
Commissioner Ricker, if you'd like to respond to that, and then I'm going to move on because I know that you have to leave us soon and there are other members that have questions.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Erickson. I am so grateful for the for everything you have shared. And I am really grateful for you sharing your frustration and for this opportunity to have this conversation with you and respond. So thank you so much for asking. First, I just want to recognize the work you pointed out that Representative Mariani and you did preceding this. And I really appreciate that work because I actually think in many respects, the order of operations was that work helped prepare us for the opportunity to make sure that the next natural step in cultural responsibility would be recognizing it in the breadth of an educator's professional experience and professional practice, both those of our teachers and of our administrators. And so having that introduction and for your consideration today and in this bill also becomes a very contemporary message we are sending during the distance learning period. What we have seen now and on April 28th, as opposed to March 30th, when distance learning, when our plans were first launched, is we are seeing evidence emerge that the barriers to equitable distance learning are disproportionately impacting our students most historically marginalized. Actually, as our students continue into this next phase of distance learning, our commitment is to make sure that we are better serving our school communities, to make sure they are building and maintaining relationships and supporting a student's well-being, and making sure they are recreating those safe and welcoming spaces for students in that distance learning setting that they so carefully created for students in their brick and mortar setting. And an important part of that is that cultural responsiveness and that ability to be able to be the educator and be the administrator who recognizes the disproportionate impact and then takes responsibility to do something about it. And so introducing these for your consideration become the natural next step for how we will make sure that we create equitable distance learning practices, as well as using the evidence we're getting from distance learning to determine how best to meet the needs of students as we are seeing that disproportionate impact in these more robust summer school programs and next fall.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next, we have Representative Grunhagen.
Hear me? Can you
yes,
hear me?
Yes, we can, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and also Commissioner, for the work that you do. I kind of identify, especially with Representative Erickson's final comments there about the continuity and the changes the students are already going to see. But I'd come at it from a little bit different perspective. I got two questions. First one is pretty simple. Have the Administrator Association and MSBA weighed in on this bill?
Commissioner Ricker.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I do not have a list of testimony or comments in front of me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. The other thing I'd say is one of our staff members did some studies on the MCAs from, again, I've got it at my office and I'm back here in Glencoe right now, from 2015, I think, till 2019. And both reading and math scores have dropped from 2015 to 2019 across the state. So one could argue that the laws that we passed in the last several sessions have done more damage than good in terms of academic performance. And I think this bill is trying to address the achievement gap, which has been around probably even before I was elected to the legislature back in 2010. And we put a lot of money and a lot of laws on top of it, and still isn't improving. So when I look at this bill, although I see some good provisions, I think that it's just another step that's going to do more damage than good to the students. And I think we should leave well enough alone and concentrate on trying to raise the academics of the students. Any response?
Yes, Commissioner Ricker.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Groomhaven. Thank you so much for asking me that and for pointing that out, is that we are working really hard to meet the needs of our students. And the strongest teaching and learning conditions meet the academic needs of students, the social emotional needs of students, and do so in a safe and welcoming environment. And those things work in concert with each other. And there are provisions here for your consideration that create safer, more welcoming environments for our students so that the academic work we're doing is that much more impactful. And there are provisions here that also address the socially emotional work we want to do on behalf of our students so that our work is more impactful. And making sure that we have the strongest teacher and principal development and evaluation systems possible is also another way of raising the ways we are meeting academic needs of our students. And so we see those things happening in concert, that we are meeting their academic needs, their social emotional needs, and doing so in a safe and welcoming environment. And these proposals for your consideration see that work happening in concert and not in isolation.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have, Representative Groomhaven, your quick follow-up, but I've got
just a follow-up, and it won't be a question, just a statement. I think, I did jail ministry for 13 years, and one of the things that's problems in jail is most of the prisoners can't read decent. And I did it for 13 years. So if you teach good, strong academics, a lot of the social, emotional concerns and attitudes will be better when they do well academically, okay? So I think you're trying to do something social and emotional, which can best be served by having a strong academic program in a disciplined classroom. Thank you, Commissioner and Chair Yuki.
Thank you, Representative Groomhaven. I have Representative Mueller has a quick clarification, then we'll go on to Representative Sandel and then Representative Mariani, and then we'll have to let the commissioner go. But NDE will be here for follow-up questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I do have a quick follow-up question. I was just looking at the effective dates on the DE, and it looks like Article 3, the Qualified Teachers for Every Student provision, does have an effective date of July 1st, 2022. So that looks like a little bit farther out than some of the other effective dates. And I just wanted to get your feedback on that, if that provides the department with some additional time needed to implement these changes.
Commissioner Ricker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Yes, as the department looks at the work we would do in our school communities to make sure that we put things in place, we are comfortable with that timeline at this point.
Thank you. Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioner, and Mr. Spies. I agree with you and with most others on our committee that we need to encourage more young men and women of color to become teachers. I think Commissioner Record suggested that our goal might be 2% of increase. I wonder if you could tell me how many individuals that represents, and how we would increase our number of teachers of color over a period of time by that number, considering the problems we're having with attrition. The other question is, does the number of teachers that we're preparing in teacher preparation programs around the state meet that number? So how many people do we need? How many people are we preparing?
Commissioner Ricker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sandel. I will get back to you about the number of teachers we currently have in teacher preparation programs, because I do not have that information with me right now. So I can get back to you about that. But I also want to thank you for recognizing that two or more things have to happen at the same time for a very modest increase of 2% a year, which is why we are proposing that we partner with PELSB to regularly produce a report that all of us can use to improve our work. And that is, first, we need to attract people into preparation programs to help diversify the teaching profession. And we need to keep them in those programs and make sure they're successful so that they can get jobs in teaching across the state. The other thing we have to do is we have to make sure that we are keeping the teachers of color and Indigenous teachers that we already have, that we don't see a higher than usual attrition rate for teachers of color and Indigenous teachers, because then that 2% won't actually help us grow a more diverse teaching force. At best, it'll help us stay where we are. And from all of the conversations I've had, there's so much agreement that we actually want to grow and increase the number of teachers of color and Indigenous teachers, that I appreciate your recognition that these things have to happen in concert, that we have to attract and keep individuals in our teacher preparation programs, and then make them feel successful in a career of teaching by supporting them. To Representative Erdahl's point, in mentoring programs wherever we can. Also to the point of the other proposal we have here, when we actually have cultural responsiveness as an expectation in teacher development and evaluation, as well as principal development and evaluation, that is one more tool we have to create welcoming environments into the teaching profession for our teachers of color and our Indigenous teachers.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here today. I want to just do a quick shout out for your leadership of pulling together recently a diverse stakeholder group to address distance learning and race equity. My organization is one of many that are participating in that. So thank you for that kind of leadership. Just on that last point really quickly, teachers of color and Indigenous teachers, it's my belief that what we call the achievement gap, which I frankly don't like that term, it's more like an opportunity gap, but that what we call the achievement gap, in my opinion, is really symptomatic of the failure of a monocultural approach to pedagogy and experiences that we provide for our diverse students. And diversifying our teaching force is one way in which we can add elements that make sense to a diverse population. Unfortunately, quite frankly, even with these provisions and the ones we traditionally have been pursuing, we're just moving way too slowly in our state to make any kind of a substantive difference in the diversity of our teaching corps anytime soon. It'll be many, many years at this rate before that happens. But let me just say very quickly, and I'll stop. I also want to appreciate Representative Erickson's questions around cultural competency, because I think it does provide us an opportunity to constantly reflect on the importance of that, and then to understand what the additional elements are to that. Relevancy is a powerful element for academic success. If it speaks to a student, if it makes sense, whatever you're instructing to a student, then they're going to lean into that instruction and into that pursuit. And one way to do that is to make sure that our teachers have the skills to be able to effectively connect and communicate with the diversity of students. And so ergo, Representative Erickson and myself have both, you know, pushed forward, you know, these skills around cultural competency. What goes beyond that, when you start talking about ethics studies, now you're talking about going beyond the skills required of our teachers, and you're really speaking to this issue of a learning experience that connects to a student's identity and how to use that connection in order to meet the academic standards that we've established in our state. So I think these are really important steps, you know, that are captured here. They're not all the steps that we need, but I think as we continue to learn how to be much more effective as a diverse society and interacting with increasingly, you know, the diverse student body, we should keep adding these tools to our toolkit. Obviously, we deal with cultural competency requirements for teacher licensing. I would hope that we fully, in the coming years, really push on pedagogical diversity through ethnic studies in order to make sure that schooling becomes that much more relevant and meaningful to this incredible diversity of young people that we have. So with that, I'll stop and thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to share.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Commissioner Ricker, if you have any final comments before we let you go, and then I'll call on Mr. Spies, too. He has some numbers for us. So Commissioner Ricker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you again to the committee members for giving me this time today to present this for your consideration. Thank you so much for your questions. Thank you for your work amidst this the COVID outbreak and all the ensuing decisions that you are making still on behalf of the state of Minnesota and our friends and neighbors and Minnesotans everywhere. I am really appreciate this time today. I look forward to continuing to visit with you about these proposals and other work that impact the students and families of our school. So thank you. Please stay safe and stay healthy, everybody. And thank you for the time.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Mr. Spies, you had some numbers to quickly share with us.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. To Representative Sandel's questions, since we have 63,000 teachers in Minnesota, a 1% increase would be a net gain of 630 teachers of color. And right now in our teacher prep programs throughout the state, over 30 of them, there are approximately 1,300 candidates of color in those programs, ranging from those just starting in teacher prep programs to those completing student teaching, and approximately 375 of those candidates complete programs every year. So we as a state have been investing a relatively small amount of money in relatively few and small programs over the past two decades. And that's kept us afloat at 4% for two decades, teachers of color, American Indian teachers, while the percentage of students of color, American Indian students, has increased from 24% to 34% in the last decade.
Thank you, Mr. Spies. And I think Representative Sandel, you had a quick follow-up question for that, and then we're going to move to the other two testifiers that have signed up to testify.
Thank you, Chair. And Mr. Spies, thanks very much for the numbers. I just hesitate to put in the law dedication of 2% a year when the numbers just don't come close to being able to provide that reference. I taught in schools for 25 years in cities and in suburban and a variety of situations. And I know, as Representative Mariani suggests, we need to be much more aggressive in attracting and keeping young men and women of color in the teaching force. But I just hesitate to think that we're going to be able to be as successful as we're trying to be in putting these numbers into law, which I think is probably unrealistic. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandel. I'd have to look at the language again, but I think it's a goal and not a requirement, but we'll look at that as we move forward. I also next have Roger Aronson and then Michelle Kofa up to testify. Just a reminder, if you can keep your comments limited so we can have more questions from members. So please, Mr. Aronson, state your name for the record and the organization you're with and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Arnson. I represent the elementary and the secondary school principals associations. When I initially signed up on the bill to testify here, we were working off the DE1 amendment. And as we've moved to the DE2 amendment, that actually has resolved some of the questions and issues that the school principals had relative to this. I might say Representative Grunhagen asked earlier, has the school board association weighed in on this or the other groups? And we do talk pretty continuously. I have talked to MSBA about this, also talked to MASA and several of the other education groups. I end up kind of being the person talking to you folks about student discipline. And so just as more of a background, I think at this point on the withdrawal agreements, which are Article 2, Sections 1, 2, 3, and 4, I do want to say, you know, in the commissioner's general statements, she used some comments that said some of these agreements, the withdrawal agreements, result in students being hidden from view and that we hide inequalities. And let me just say, I think it's very, very important that the committee understand what school districts are doing here. Expulsions are rather complicated and expensive proceedings, and very often, rather than going through the expulsion hearing where the result is going to be pretty clear, the student engaged in some significant behavior that's going to expose them to being expelled, students are allowed to withdraw, and then there is no formal record that they were expelled. This language, which the department wants to track these agreements, now will create a formal record. Students would no longer have the option of not having a formal record. There will be a formal record. We'll report them as withdrawal agreements under that, and we can do that. One question that you may want to ask the department is, it says when we track these agreements now, they want us to do one other thing, and that's to say what services the district that the student is leaving believes are necessary to prevent the inappropriate behavior from recurring. I'm not exactly sure how we're going to do that. I mean, I think it's well-intentioned, but I just don't know what are they, you know, don't engage in the behavior again, I suppose. But, and I don't mean that to be glib, but I think that that's an issue there. Another piece of this is, and I think withdrawal agreements are valuable, under the open enrollment statute, if a student's been expelled for weapons, drugs, or assault, they can be prevented from open enrolling into another district. So if you use a withdrawal agreement, they don't potentially lose that right to open enroll somewhere else. It's important for the committee to keep in mind, number one, that we have a system that says every kid is going to get educational services somewhere. The fact that a student is expelled does not mean that they lose the right to continued education services. In fact, it's very clear under Minnesota law and the statute that if we expel a kid, we still have to provide educational services to that student. So I think that we need to keep that in mind. Then the other piece is, and I would have you take a peek at the existing language that's in Subdivision 1. Current law actually requires us to transmit all suspension, exclusion, and expulsion data to a subsequently enrolling district. So we do provide quite a bit of information to the students as they move into another district. So just important pieces of background. I don't think there's any mischief or ill intent on the part of school districts when we use these devices. Generally, these involve a very significant underlying set of behaviors by the student, you know, that are going to expose them to having to move out of the district. When that happens, we look at, might they enroll in an ALC? Might they enroll in a neighboring district? Might they go into online learning programs or some type of homebound program or others? It is always a complicated deal for a school district to try to figure out how to deliver services in these rather difficult circumstances. So I do want to recognize that the department has accommodated concerns that we had about the bill and taken some language out. And that puts us in a position here to say that we can do these things that they want us to do. Okay, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Arnson. If you could stick around for questions if folks have it. And then Michelle Kofa, if you could please state your name for the record, the organization you're with, and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michelle Kofa, and I'm the policy manager at EdAllies, an advocacy organization that works to advance educational equity and remove barriers so all Minnesota students can receive a rigorous and engaging education. First, I'd like to say thank you for not including language that would have removed pathways to permanent licensure for teachers who have demonstrated effectiveness for the last 3 years on a Tier 2 license. EdAllies believes that great teachers should not be blocked from the classroom and that Minnesota students should never miss out on an effective teacher based off of arbitrary or archaic barriers to teaching. Also, thank you for not including language that requires all, I also thank you for including language that requires all communication relating to school meal debt to be communicated between students, parents, / guardians, and school trained staff. We hope that this will put an end to lunchroom practices in our state schools. I appreciate your leadership on reforming school discipline practices and support the pupil withdrawal agreement provision that would finally allow the state to capture data on pupil withdrawal agreements. Pupil withdrawal agreements are often used for schools to sidestep expulsions, but very little information about the practice is used to know, so it's important that we finally collect and report this information. We do, however, have some concerns with suspensions and expulsions for 3- and 4-year-olds still being allowed in our current school system. I understand that in earlier versions of the governor's priorities, putting a ban on suspensions and expulsions for our youngest learners was included. We hope that the governor and the legislator will continue to work to make sure our 3- and 4-year-olds who are three times more likely to be expelled than our K-12 students are never dismissed from Minnesota school again. An additional concern or question of clarification is around the affiliated nonprofit building corporation provision in the bill. This provision would change statute to read, only one local education agency charter school may organize an affiliated nonprofit building corporation. It is still unclear if multi-site charter schools or schools that are wishing to expand are considered one local education agency. It is important not to create operational barriers for high quality charter schools that wish to expand. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your leadership on this bill. I hope this committee can continue to support non-exclusionary discipline practices and support the expansion of high quality charter schools. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kofa. Members, that's all we had for folks signed up to testify. So I'd like to open it up to member questions. Members, just a reminder, you can use the raise your hand feature on Zoom, or you can email our Alyssa Fritz and Megan Ariola, or press *9. Members, this is your chance to have questions answered on these provisions before we include them in a policy bill. Members, not seeing any questions. Mr. Uni, did you have any follow-up comments before we move on with our agenda?
Madam Chair, no comments, just a thank you to you, the chair, and the committee again for hearing these provisions. I'll just echo many of the commissioner's comments, and that we are trying to address needs and supports that are there now and will continue to be there when we emerge from this COVID-19 pandemic. And so we just appreciate all the consideration for these provisions.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. And members, I wanna thank everybody for being a part of the hearing today. We anticipate next hearing being on this Friday at 4 p.m. And that will be the time that we'll walk through the very skinny, slimmed down version of an education policy bill. And with that, then the following week, we will go through the bill again for amendments and a vote. Stay tuned on when that time will be. And I wanted to check and see if members have any other questions. A procedural question. Seeing none, members, that concludes our business today, and the meeting is now adjourned.